Hello and welcome to the Ecocentrics. I'm Tom.
And I'm PK. And this week we're going to talk about the PM shift in UK green policies.
And think about just some of the policies the PM has decided he's going to U-turn on.
And what exactly does this mean for Britain?
This could be a ranty one from me.
So buckle your seatbelts. All right, Tom. So there were a few things covered in the announcement this week, which I think had us all floored and ranting. And before we get started, though, we want to just make sure that some of you probably know what the term net zero means, but just in case you don't, essentially, in a nutshell, it means we need to dramatically, by at least 90%, reduce the emissions we output now to ensure we have a healthy, safe, resilient future.
Yeah, and critically for the UK, we're looking to do that by 2050 and reaching our net zero 2050 target. But I think actually what's really important about the conversation that we'll have today, it is the context in which it's going on to, because we've all seen the announcements, or hopefully you've seen the announcements, and it's a very, very interesting change of direction from the UK government. And I think it's really interesting when we look around at all of the other things going around our climate space at the moment and the political space to understand where this is coming from and why things are changing. First and foremost, let's be clear, and this is a scathing critique here, the UK is faltering a lot of the action that's going on around net zero at the moment. Some of you who are energy nerds like me will have seen a few weeks ago that the Contracts for Difference, the mechanism of which companies in the UK can bid to create and build renewable energy, fell through on offshore wind. No one bid for those contracts for difference. So we're not building any more offshore wind as a result of the government's poor policy making and planning. So we are faltering in a few key areas. We've also had massive underinvestment in the UK when we compare ourselves to the US and the EU on climate change. And really, we're starting to become a bit of a laggard on this field. So a bit of a change in tone compared to the leaders that we were from the 2008 onwards. And most importantly, for the UK context and for anyone who's outside of the UK, the party in government right now, the Conservative Party, are polling very, very badly. And they know there needs to be an election in the next 12 months. And they're thinking about ways which they can grab onto voters and push things forward. And there was a really interesting example of what happened recently with the ULEZ, the ultra low emission zone in London. And there was a by-election. So Boris Johnson stepped down as an MP. They had to bring in a new MP, so there's this by-election process. And the ULEZ, the ultra-low emission zone, was taken as a really polarising political topic. And the Conservative Party basically said, oh, the Labour mayor of London, he's trying to enforce all these restrictions on our lives. The Labour Party are anti-cars. And they really held on to this narrative to kind of be, oh, we're for freedom. That Labour Party, they want to take your car, they want to burn it. They want to chuck it in the bin and throw it away. And this is the kind of context which we're seeing all these actions going on in, that we've got a stumbling party in power and they're looking for things to polarize. And it's really concerning as well, because basically they're using Trumpian populist playbooks to say, oh, let's see how we can polarize the political opinion. How can we make this a divisive issue? How can we make climate change something which has a dividing line? Because all credit to both political parties in the UK, for the last 20 years, they've both known it's a thing and they've both been interested in it. I'm not saying they've both done a good job in doing things on climate change, and we've seen failures from both sides in delivering climate action, but they both agreed that climate change is an important issue for us to do something about. This week's announcement puts a whole new spanner in the works here. All of a sudden, it's a politically contentious and polarizing issue in the UK.
I think that's actually a really good point to make up. Politics can have a way of faltering all of our good policies. And I like that you said stumbling party, because this could happen regardless of who's in power. When you're stumbling, you start to capitulate or you start to make what I consider to be these sort of canard type of arguments. And it's exactly what you said. These Labour people don't want you to have cars. They want to take that away from you and make you buy something more expensive or tax you even more. When in fact, a lot of these policies will actually make life easier for people, but certainly it'll dramatically reduce pollution, which has an enormous impact, especially in towns and big cities like London and metropolitan areas, has a massive impact on human health and additionally on the burden it puts on our NHS.
And I think it's really interesting with that one, because actually a lot of the language that came from this is just feeding into kind of the far right interpretation of climate change. There's a line from Rishi Sunak's speech in which he said, "The UK only makes up 1% of global emissions." And that's what you hear in the far right newspapers that we have in the UK. This doesn't really take into the historical context of the UK as a major player and driver of emissions historically. And also our responsibility as a relatively wealthy country to do something on this and lead the way. And fundamentally, there is an absolutely enormous economic opportunity for net zero. And we are failing to grab that in the UK because of poor governing decisions.
We do often hear this thing of, well, per capita, we're very low in terms of the emissions we produce, but those only take into impact what we produce within our geographic borders. So go into your closets, pull out 10 pieces of clothing. What brands are they and where did they come from? We are a massive importer of products. And it's really the reason why, per capita, a UK citizen has such a low carbon footprint comparatively. In certain statistics, when you look around the world, is because we have exported our carbon footprint. So we are a huge importer of goods and services, mostly because we want to buy things cheaper than we would have to in a country where we have good labor laws, where we don't allow children to work, where we don't really want dyes that dye our clothing to go into our river system. So we've exported our carbon footprint, and we've also exported some of the pollution that would come with that and given that to countries where people don't have the rights to speak for themselves like we do. It could be anything, anything in your home. Grab 10 items and wonder to yourself, was this made in Britain? Were all the parts of this made in Britain? Was it produced in Britain? Where was the energy? It's very unlikely, unless it's your potato.
Brilliant.
All right, back on track, back on track.
Should we think about the policy that came out this week? What's actually been said? What does it mean? How can we start thinking about action around it as well? So, to start off with, we're going to think about the new announcements around cars.
Yeah, so originally we had a 2030 target of no more new diesel and petrol vehicles being sold within the UK. And that's been pushed into the future by 5 years. The government have been saying they're doing this due to the cost of living crisis. However, there was a lot of positive innovation and a lot of job creation that could be involved in this as well. And the Ford UK chair said that the net zero target is a vital catalyst to industry and a cleaner future. They said what they need to see from the government is three things: ambition, commitment, and consistency. And they said this new rule undermines all three of those. So that's just one member, a high-ranking member from one industry, and that's what they're saying about this particular issue in terms of, say, cars.
What is interesting is the way that they've got away with saying this is, oh, Germany have a 2035 target, the US have a 2035 target, or California has a 2035 target. And what's so sad about that is actually the UK was ahead there. And therefore, people were coming to the UK to come and do their work because they realized we needed to do these things quickly. And I think there's a massive overestimation of the UK's role in the global stage nowadays. Actually, and I say this to people a lot, pretty much a second-rate nation nowadays with our economic performance, if you take out London. And really, this was an opportunity for us to do things which were built around that and actually bring jobs to the country and think about how we could support decarbonisation in a really powerful way within our communities. The reality is, when you look at the analysis, how is it going to affect the sale of electric vehicles? Probably not going to affect it that much at all, because electric vehicles are falling in price so quickly that people will tend to buy them over normal conventional vehicles. But this is an urgent and pressing crisis. We need all vehicles, not just most, to be electric. It doesn't mean that we can just ignore the 10% of people that love the sound of a petrol engine and say, oh yeah, it doesn't matter, you have that, because we need to get those emissions off of our roads as well. And if we enable them to continue, we're going to have those emissions into the future. The car lasts 15, 20 years. They will continue to be spewing emissions into our atmosphere, potentially up to 2050. That is the issue here. We need to think about the long-term impacts. And one of the things that really grinded my gears on the policy announcement on Wednesday was the fact that it was all about thinking about long-term planning and long-term policies. And they've just forgotten the most fundamental one. the one that it matters to all of us, the existence of human civilization. They've just been that one as a long-term policy strategy in chasing short-term political gain. And I think just a final note on the cars point here. There was some rapid analysis done earlier this week by Carbon Brief, and we'll share a link to that post in the show notes of this session. And they looked at the impact on drivers. And rather than it being a cost, the electrification of vehicles, as the government has said, they actually expect it to cost UK drivers around about £6 billion a year by 2030 because of the reduction in production going on in the local area, the quicker economies of scale as a result of it, and all of the tipping points and feedback loops which exist in that system to drive down prices even faster. And obviously, there's a huge social cost in terms of the NHS and the things that go on around that. It was actually really interesting. I was at a conference yesterday, and someone said to me that they were talking about the framing of this vehicle debate. And they said to me, actually, electric vehicles aren't a cost. And actually, when you go down the street, you go to a polluted borough in London or you go to a polluted part of a city, I'm sure a kid walking down the street with asthma looks to the right-hand side when an electric vehicle goes past and just sighs a little bit and says, thanks for having that, rather than just spewing these fumes, which are going to make it worse. And this is the policy decision that we've made in vehicles in the UK.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. You pay for it now or you pay for it later. And paying for it now actually offsets an enormous compounded cost in the future. I think you're absolutely right. Let's talk about heat pumps. Because apparently, soon after the announcement by Sunak, there was a flurry of Google search activity increasing significantly. What is a heat pump? How does it work? How much does it cost? How do you install it? So that is a positive, but let's talk about that.
Yeah, so there were a few announcements which came on Wednesday around the heating systems of the future, so to speak. A big one, another delaying tactic to push back the requirement for houses which were getting new heating systems fitted in 2030 to have heat pumps or low carbon decarbonized heating systems, and instead pushing that to 2035. So up to 2035, you can still get oil, gas, heating as well, rather than just electrification of heating.
So we're seeing a theme here. Push cars, heat pumps, 2030 to 2035. When it gets close to, let's say, 2028, will we be seeing these being pushed from 2035 to 2040? This is concerning in some ways because we are just pushing back the inevitable investments we'll need to make.
There was a glimmer of light in all of this, and I don't want to give the government any praise for the announcements that came this week because, all in all, they were absolutely awful and they just had me thumping my desk as I was listening to the announcements. However, they have increased the amount of money available for the boiler upgrade scheme. So, the boiler upgrade scheme is financial support available for households to move from an old heating system, so a gas heating system, to a modern heat pump. And previously it was £5,000. And they've moved it up to £7,500 instead now. And that is really exciting because actually, especially with some of the announcements from Octopus Energy last week around some of their Cozy Six heat pumps, so it could well mean heat pumps are effectively free for people to install. However, what this announcement, as a lot of announcements, fail to do is recognize the social context in which they're set as well. And the one thing that riled me up more than anything else in his speech was the fact that he was just basically saying, oh, you can't heat a property from the 1800s with the heat pump. Oh, buildings of a certain size can't be using heat pumps. And basically just spreading complete misinformation around these heating systems. And again, just placating this far right agenda around, oh, that we gas is part of our lives. We were connected to gas. And that's the bit that's really riled me up, the rhetoric that existed around all of this. And basically just making people feel more doubt around going to electrified heating. Whereas actually, when you see things on the ground, most of the time, they are much better and things will only improve. We're at the start of a heat pump revolution at the moment. By 2030, we'll have had 7 more years of delivery implementation and see how we can improve these systems even more. That is the reality of where we are. There's one more thing I want to talk about heat on, and that is the changes that went on to the EPC ratings as well. But basically, they've scrapped a few rules around EPCs, basically saying, people in houses spend extortionate amounts of money doing insulation in their buildings. And actually, what they were changing is a lot of rules around landlords. EPCs, so their energy performance certificate, the energy efficiency of the properties are measured by these EPCs. And there was drive to get the landlords to go to certain standards to basically reduce the bills for their tenants. So the people living in these houses who have no control over the building actually can reduce their bills. But good old Conservative Party have said, oh, don't care about those tenants. Leave them alone. I care about my mates, the landlords. And what they've done is they've scrapped the laws around this and they've said, we're not going to be forcing anyone to do this expensive insulation. And joy of joys, this will cost consumers around about 24 billion by 2030. And those consumers aren't those landlords. Instead, it's the people that live in those houses that have to rent, that can't afford to get into the housing market, which are going to be suffering.
And additionally, the sooner we can get all of these homes insulated, that reduces the demand on our energy grid system. And it saves, again, to Tom's point, it saves the renter, who are also British public, money. As we've said with all of this, and with almost every one of our podcasts, investment now saves the British public and the planet money down the road. And it saves so much in terms of health, physical health, air pollution, our young children, our elderly, anyone. It makes us a more resilient and adaptive country. And by rolling all of these things back, we are also becoming in the world globally. And according to the Climate Change Committee, which is a statutory body that is mandated to report on Parliament on how the government is failing in their own policies, says we are now not becoming a world leader on this topic. We are going behind, which Tom mentioned earlier. It means countries that have different net zero targets are no longer coming to the UK to learn from us, to innovate with us. And also, investment in innovation has gone down significantly in the UK for the same reason.
Sigh, big sigh.
I do want to address a couple of the hilarious things, Tom, that I thought were so funny. Like, now the UK government isn't going to mandate that you only get one flight a year. Or, don't worry, we won't be making you put those seven bins out every week. Or, what were some of the other things they said, Tom, which I just thought were hilarious?
They were talking about meat taxes and the fact that we weren't going to be putting taxes on meats.
Oh, yes. These things were not seriously under consideration at all. And that comes from the Climate Change Committee, again, the statutory UK body, said this wasn't going to happen.
The one that I found most funny was that them saying, we're going to stop compulsory car sharing. Like, how would
Oh,
you even
yes.
regulate that? On what planet are you going to be able to genuinely deliver that? I'm also going to be honest, as people that care about this, some of these things are probably really good things we need to do in terms of consuming so much. But some of the things they're saying, absolutely ridiculous. Seven bins, compulsory car sharing. Where's this coming from?
And on that note, I was working with a client this week who was saying that, in the terms of the work they've done with another company I work with, they would have never thought that their employees would car share. They said they were all quite independent and were like, da da da. And surprisingly, this particular company, they said they have a percentage of their employees are actually car sharing now, which was a surprise to me because I know that's something that a lot of people, even environmentally sensitive people, dig their heels in on because, you know, you might have three kids where you have to run them from here to there and everywhere. And you just car sharing just doesn't feel feasible. So I was pretty impressed with that this group of that had mostly men that were real gruff, were starting to car share.
So, final bits of this week's announcements. And there are a few things that are really interesting just to review in a bit more detail as well, because they haven't got as much public scrutiny. The one thing that really concerned me was the way that carbon budgets are going to be politicized. So, carbon budgets are it's a process which the UK goes through, where the Climate Change Committee, the independent advisor to the government, releases basically emissions targets at least 10 years into the future. So the most recent carbon budget was looking from 2033 to 2037, thinking about what our emissions should look like then to be aligned with the Paris Agreement. And what the process is normally they're just ticked off. It's a scientific process. We know the science. The science is not contested. And Parliament says, yes, we're going to be doing this. And it becomes legally binding that we will try and reach the carbon budgets. However, rather than it just being a scientific tick, which I think is really important for this, Rishi Sunak said that there's going to be more scrutiny and more of a parliamentary debate around the carbon budget. So maybe thinking about it, something like a budget. So you debate the budget and think about how we can spend things in certain ways. And I think it's really scary in many ways because actually it means that we won't be thinking about just the scientific side of this anymore. The science will overlap with politics. If we let the science be blurred by politics and political rhetoric and views and trying to win elections today, I can't see this being a good thing. By politicizing this process, it makes me very concerned that the carbon budgets will lose their independence, and it means they will not be as robust and rigorous as they need to be moving forward.
I think that is a scary thing about it as well. And like you said, this actually isn't, when we think of parliamentary debate, that's not something that needs to be done with science. The science is robust. We understand this. And the carbon budget is in place for a specific reason to ensure our futures. And now those futures, just like everything else we've noted today, are being imperiled.
And I think you only have to watch one day of Prime Minister's questions to just see the petty fighting that goes on in that building. And that's from both sides. This isn't an attack at one party here. The political system of today does not work for genuine debate around this topic because we're just trying to score points rather than have discussions. And we need to have good discussions to get through this challenge.
And one of the things I really liked as well on the day after was listening to the House of Lords. And they did such an amazing job from conservatives to Green Party members going, this is not what we want to hear. I don't understand this. It's just going to make us more vulnerable in the future. And again, considering our last podcast where we mentioned the House of Lords, this was another case where the House of Lords could go, you know what? I don't have to worry about re-election. So I'm going to ask the hard-hitting questions.
Yeah, who'd have thought, APK, me and you advocating for the House of Lords 2 weeks in a row?
We'd be getting out our cheerleading pom-poms for the House of Lords.
The last thing to say on this week as well, and I'm going to end with a few glimmers of hope here in all of this. One bit of the policy, and this is to try and be less political in all of this, I think was really good and really interesting. And that was the fact that there was going to be a comprehensive review of energy infrastructure. So as anyone who works in the energy sector or is familiar with the energy sector knows, the national grid is in an absolutely dire state. It cannot connect new infrastructure to our systems. It's not ready for the decentralization that we're going to have with renewable energy. And it's just not, we're not ready for the energy future that's ahead of us. We need a lot of investment in the national grid. And actually, it's good to hear that the government's taking that seriously and they're going to review this.
Yeah, because that'll be there to hopefully, if they invest in it, it'll be there to support some of these things we're going to need to have in place.
Before we go to our quiz today, a positive for all of us to take away moving forward. There are a whole load of legal challenges floating around the place at the moment from this bill that went through. All sorts of organisations, from Client Earth, the Good Law Project, to individuals kind of protected by the Aarhus Convention, are thinking about tackling government on this issue. So support them. If you do nothing else this weekend or this week, go and see the groups that are doing it. See what you can do to support them. It might just be something as simple as signing a petition. Go out and support those organizations.
I think there's something we've got to remember to do this week, Tom, and that is to identify the climate criminal. Who might we nominate today?
I don't know. It's a tough one, really, isn't it?
I think the initials are RS.
Oh, I don't know. I'm not sort of familiar with ringing any bells for me. Yeah.
Of course, it is Rishi Sunak, our prime minister.
Full stop.
Full stop. This week's climate criminal.
I've got a feeling he's going to be back here very soon as well.
Wow, we're going to go into our quiz, but before we do, we would like to introduce. She's been there from the very beginning, but you've never heard her voice, but we really are delighted and have wanted her to be more a part of the Ecocentrics. And that is our fantastic producer, Emma Newman. This week, she is going to be quizzing Tom and me. So welcome, Emma.
Hello, thank you very much. Yes, I am going to be quizzing you. I'm a bit nervous about doing the quiz actually, because now my own knowledge is being put to the test. But I will say, all I've done is just read a Guardian article and a BBC website. So if any of this is factually incorrect, that's who's to blame, okay?
Let's always toss the blame on somebody else. We're going to just fall in line with government.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I like to point the finger. The other thing I was going to say is there's two of you, obviously, this time playing the quiz. PK versus Tom, which...
Uh-oh, here we go.
So I want you to come up with your own noise that signals that you want to answer the question. You don't need to tell me what it is now. You can surprise me when you think you know the answer.
I'm a bit concerned that you're going to get the competitive part of me coming out here, Emma. And I don't think it's a good thing for everyone to see.
This is what we want. Right. We've not got long, so I'm going to fire through this. Okay, are you ready? In Rishi Sunak's speech this week, he said the UK had the fastest reduction in greenhouse gas emissions in the G7. Down by what percentage since 1990? Tom, you were the loudest go.
71%.
PK.
I'm going to say 43%.
You are the closest. It was 50%, almost 50%.
Oh, it's all about a certain carbon tax that went in place in the early part of 2010.
So question two. Rishi Sunak announced he would no longer require homeowners and landlords to meet energy efficiency targets. In his words, no expensive insulation upgrades. However, last year, according to The Guardian, research found that people living in more poorly insulated homes would have to spend how much more on their gas over the winter? Go.
£412.
PK.
I'm going to say 672.
You are closest again. The point goes to you. It's £1,000.
£1,000?
No!
Yeah.
I paid Emma earlier.
This is rigged. This quiz is rigged.
Question three. According to the zero emissions mandate, which is due to come into force on the 1st of January, car makers will be obliged by 2030 to ensure what percentage of cars sold have zero tailpipe emissions. Go.
80%.
Bang on. You've clawed it back. You are on the money. 80%. Okay, this is the final question. And 7 points up for grabs here. So you probably can guess where this question is going. The seven deadly bins, as I like to call them.
Seven deadly bins.
This year, there was talk of waste collection being divided into seven bins, separating recyclables from rubbish. Although the plan has been delayed, stroke scrapped, was never going to happen in the first place. You have got 7 points if you can name all seven separate things that were going to go into those bins.
I can't name all seven, but I think one of them should definitely be the recycled lies from the government.
That's bin number eight. Give me the other seven.
Glass, metal, plastics, cardboard, styrofoam.
Pardon?
You've missed the one that you love the most, PK. Food waste.
Food waste. Yes, food waste.
One more, guys. One more.
Tom, bring it in. Tom, bring it in.
Is this just still a general waste bin?
Yes,
somewhere?
General waste.
Yeah.
Oh, general. Duh. That's the one I forgot.
There we go. So it's glass, paper and cardboard, metal, plastic, garden waste, food waste and general rubbish. And that is your quiz. I think it's fair to say that PK did win this week. So round of applause for PK.
Sorry, Tom.
I'd like to lodge a formal complaint with the BBC and Guardian.
I think I should get bonus points for the bin number eight with the recycled lies of government, which would be full every single week.
That's it. We've made it. We're through the episode. Another week done.
We'll be back next week with a slightly different episode.
We're going to the outside world.
We're heading to an allotment in Derby to meet the potty plotters, Lane and Julia.
Two women who are living the green dream. And they could be taking my allotment virginity.
Yes. And in the meantime, if you want to get in touch, we're on hello@theecocentrics.com.
Or find us at all the usual social media places.
Ciao.
Bye.